and welcome to Joshua Space, a podcast all about books. On this very special episode, I get to interview four science fiction authors. Similar to the last episode, each interview will be roughly 10 minutes long. Featured on today's episode are Danielle Harrington, author of The Diseased Ones, Jay-Z Foster, author of the Reality Bleeds series, Sam Renner, author of the Galaxy Run series, and Erica Everin, author of the upcoming Mission to Rorak, the first book in a new series. I do want to mention that if you wish to purchase any of these books, you can do so by going to my bookshop.org profile. Without further ado, let's listen in to the interview with Danielle Harrington. All right, Danielle, well, thank you so much for joining me on this episode to talk about your book, The Diseased Ones, which is the first book in the Hollis Timewire series. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what the book is about?
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here. So The Diseased Ones is a young adult dystopian novel set way, way in the future. The year is 2647. So a lot has happened in the world. And essentially, when someone turns 16, they have to take a blood test to determine if they can become a citizen of the world or not. And this blood test tests for a biomarker. And on the morning of her 16th birthday, Hollis Timewire receives the worst possible news. She can't become a citizen of the world. She's a diseased one. So she's born with this brain-altering biomarker that gives her superpowers. And she's forced to hide underground with other diseased ones who believe that the government basically lied to the world and has falsified history, so to speak. And now Hollis has to figure out what she believes, what she was raised to believe about the diseased ones being these, like, basically a mistake of evolution, these horrible creatures that have tried to take over the world 100 years ago, and their brain has gone crazy because of this blood biomarker, or what these people are telling her about how the government's lied to her whole life. So it's kind of a found family kind of worldview struggle, like what should she believe and what's real. And it was very fun. The goal of that was to write a character that was severely brainwashed, and I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to write, because I think it's one of the interesting things, especially like in today's society, is we didn't live through history. And so it's very easy to kind of wash over certain aspects of history a little bit. So what originally gave you the inspiration for this novel? Like, when did the idea first start to come to you?
So there were a lot of different pieces of media that I consumed prior to writing this book. A couple of big ones. My favorite book ever in the whole entire world is The Giver by Lois Lowry. I was obsessed with that book. I probably read it like 50 times growing up. I just kept rereading it. It was so good. And it kind of just introduced me to dystopian literature. And I was like, wow, this is pretty great. I like this. So then I read Hunger Games. And Hunger Games was, I think, the first book that I read in one day, because it was so captivating. I was like, what have I been missing in my life? This is amazing. And I've been writing since I was 5 years old. So I was like, I want to write a book that makes me feel as excited as I felt reading Hunger Games for the first time. So that was like always a goal of mine, kind of in the back of my head. And then I read The Uglies by Scott Westerfield, another one of my favorites, obsessed with that. I was watching the TV show Heroes, which I don't know if you've seen that or not, but they had, obviously, it's about heroes with superpowers and, you know, fighting the government. And that's a trope we see over and over again, kind of like in X-Men and things like that. But watching that show and kind of synthesizing some of my favorite stories in the dystopian genre, I was like, I want to write something like this. So I finished the TV show Heroes. And then over the next 4 weeks, I drafted The Diseased Ones in 4 weeks, like the whole entire book. It was very, very messy word vomit at that point. And like, it was still very infantile in its development. But I had this story of just like this girl that was brainwashed that makes the wrong choice just walk into my head. And I was like, oh, I'm obsessed with this. I really want to write this. And so that turned into me getting serious about like, how do I get published? Because I had no idea. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even know how to write. Like, I was a storyteller
Yeah.
my whole life, but I wasn't a writer until I took it seriously and went to writing conferences and learned from industry professionals, like took editing workshops, took storytelling workshops, took book pitching workshops, like all the things I didn't know. I didn't even know what I didn't know. So
yeah.
Those pieces of media probably influenced me the most in writing this particular, the first book in my series, for sure.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you're more of a pantser, at least with the first book.
Yes. The first book, I totally pantsed. The second book, well, actually, I intended the diseased ones to be a standalone. And then when my sister read it, she was so upset with me over the ending. Which everyone's upset with me after they read the first book. I've had many people tell me that they want to throw my book across the room. And I'm like, then I've done my job. That makes me feel so happy. But she was like so upset with me. She's like, no, you can't end it right there. You can't do that. And I was like, that's how it ends. That's her story. She's like, no, it's not. You need to keep writing. And so she bugged me for months about it. And I thought about it and I was like, look, if I'm going to continue and make this a series, each book in the series has to have like a goal that it's centered around. Like,
yeah.
Until I find that thing for book two, I'm not writing it. And so I had to think about it for a while. But once I figured out the main goal of my second book, I pretty much pantsed it too, like centering it around that goal, obviously, because
yeah.
I needed that thing that would compel the story into the next chapter. But my third book has been very meticulously planned because now there's a lot going on, a lot more characters. And since the first two books are published, they're like canon now, so I can't change things.
Yeah.
I have to refer back to like what I built and what I said and what I made before and keep it consistent. So it's a lot of work working through this third book now. Like, I was like, can I even do this? I just pantsed the first two books in my series. Like, what am I supposed to do now?
I feel like that'd be one of the most difficult things, is to remember every character, like the description of the characters, the qualities of the characters, all the specific plot points throughout multiple books. And if you're going to refer back to, like, make sure it's accurate.
Yes. And actually, what's so cool, and this started out unintentional, but it's very intentional now. Some of the things that happen in my first book are being now like called back upon in the third book. And I'm like, I put that in there because I thought it was cool, or I thought it was intense. You know, it brought tension. No, like, it actually was so important to the whole series. And I didn't even plan it. But I'm like, damn, this is so cool now. Like, this is amazing. It's like I planned it all along.
That's awesome. Who's gonna know?
No, nobody's gonna know. How would I know?
So with getting a publisher, with trying to get published, with like all of that, how long from, I know it took you 4 weeks for the first book to get the first draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously I'm sure there's a lot of revisions that happened because it was more of like just a word dump. How long from once you had the first draft to kind of finishing, did you start looking into getting it published? Or did you start looking in once you did the first word dump of it?
So after my first writing conference, I learned so much over that weekend. I practically filled up an entire notebook and I was like, all right, I got to sit down and rewrite this entire book. Because one, it was too short and there were a lot of problems with the writing, not necessarily my storytelling, because after taking the storytelling workshops, I'm like, I know how to tell a story. I know what stakes are. I know how to like that makes sense to my brain. And
yeah.
That's why I like reading books and consuming, you know, TV shows and stuff where each season the stakes are raised magically and you're like, wow, this is so intense. I was good at that part, but the nitty gritty details of like the writing itself is what I really had to work on. So I rewrote the entire book after that first writing conference, and then I started querying it because I was like, I think I want to do traditional publishing. And I queried probably like maybe like 100, maybe like 80 to 100. I don't even remember. It was like a blur of a year of querying it. And I did get a couple of full manuscript requests and a couple of partials, and like everything ended in a no. And at that point, I was getting a little discouraged. And I was like, I know it's hard to get traditionally published, but like, this is a good book. Like, this is a good story. I didn't just have my family read it, because it's like, I don't know, you can't get super honest feedback. But like, I had people like read it and be like, wow, like, we really love this. Like, are you going to write more? Are you going to publish it? Like, I was like, I'm working on it. I mean, but then traditional, just like, I was like, I don't, there's a lot of pros to traditional, like publicity and like being a big name author or and like all those things, but you don't get a lot of the creative control.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of royalties on the back end. And like I learned all about this and I was like, well, maybe I should like try for a small press or like just go completely indie. But I didn't want to go completely indie because I still felt like I didn't know what I was doing. Like I needed a team of people to help me because I was really serious about this and I wanted to put a book out that I was proud of that reflected the best I could possibly do. And I know it's like a debut novel. Like I'm better than I was when I released that book. I'm a lot better in many ways with my writing and storytelling now. But I went to that same writing conference again, Southern California Writers Conference, and I met Acorn Publishing, which they're a hybrid publisher. So technically, I'm still an indie author. I just have like a team of people that have helped me through the publishing process and how to do it all myself, if that makes sense. So they're kind of like a small press publisher, but it's just like, here's a team of people and we're helping authors like connect them with editors and connect them with cover artists and connect them with book formatters. And here's how you upload your stuff to Amazon. And here's how you like get a hardback on Barnes & Noble. Like, I didn't know any of this. Here's an ISBN number. Like all these things, they are specifically like there to guide authors on how to do it themselves. So it was a really great find because I met them through the Southern California Writers Conference. And in a read and critique workshop, I was reading my first chapter and someone who worked for the ladies that started Acorn Publishing went to them at this conference. And they were like, we just found the next Hunger Games. You need to talk to this girl. And I heard about this afterwards. And when I tell you that they said that to me, and then I like had this conversation with them and then I walked into the bathroom and then I freaked out. Like I was like, I didn't want to be not normal in front of them, but I like lost my shit. Like the most exciting comment anyone had said about, you know, my book.
Yeah.
So from the very first, like I drafted it in 4 weeks to it being published was probably like 3-ish years.
Okay.
And then my second one came out pretty quickly after that because I had already drafted it. So I took everything I learned with rewriting the diseased ones probably 4 full times and finally working with a legit developmental editor and learning a lot from her. And so my rewrite of the unseen ones like went really quickly. And so the diseased ones came out February 2020 and the unseen ones came out December 2020. It was very quick turnaround.
Yeah. And then so the third book comes out, you said the beginning of next year, 2023.
I'm hoping for an early 2023 release because I have to finish drafting it. And it's going really well now. I just started drafting yesterday because I took a year off because I was pregnant and I was full-time teaching and like there was a lot going on. And so I reread what I had of the book, which was a second draft. Like I had word dumped. It was all messy. And I was like, I just need to restart this book because the first two were out and I had a much clearer idea of what the third one was supposed to be at that point. And so I rewrote 2/3 of it. Then I got pregnant. Then I had a chaotic school year. So then I took a big break and I just spent the last like 2 months doing mild line edits, like cutting and adding things as I kept thinking about the story. And just yesterday I started drafting again and I've outlined the rest of the book. So I have like probably 13 more chapters before it's fully drafted. So I'm feeling a lot closer now. I haven't really pinned down a release date because I don't want to like put the pressure on that book. Because I don't need to, like I'm not on a particular timeline, even though my readers are like, where's the third book? I'm like, guys, I'm working on it.
So my last question would be, will there be a fourth book or will everything be concluded in the third book?
There will be a fourth book.
Okay. Yeah,
there's too much at the end of the third. It was originally going to be 3, but then the more I kept thinking about the world, I was like, nah, the stakes got to go one level higher.
I love how it went from a standalone and you were dead set on, no, it's going to be a standalone. I'm not writing another book to, well, now I have to write 4 because it can't be 3. Like that's awesome. Yeah.
Can't be 3. Yeah. It's 4. And someone asked me, they're like, would it be 5? I was like, you know, honestly, I can't answer that question right now. I'm pretty sure it's 4 because that's all I've like conceptualized. The stakes are pretty damn high in book 4. And I think like the resolution is, I don't know. Probably 4, but I was like, I'll see when I get there.
You never know until it happens.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, the true last question I have for you, which you kind of already mentioned, you kind of answered it already at the very beginning, but what is your favorite novel of all time?
It has to be The Giver. Giver, just because it inspired my love of reading, and like it's a short book, but it's so poignant, like, and strong in its message, and it's a really great storytelling, I think. I didn't really like the movie that much.
Okay, so
a hyper super fan of the book, but
I have a question for you though. Because I'm always fascinated to know if I'm alone on this. When you read The Giver, were you in, because the movie, obviously, it showed like very, very futuristic, kind of living in this bubble, but like very, very modern and futuristic. Is that what you visualized when you read The Giver?
Not really.
Okay, me either.
Not really.
I almost envisioned like almost like a Western, but like still like not West. I don't know. Like it was not super futuristic in my brain.
Yeah. I didn't picture it quite like how the movie portrayed it, but yeah. I don't really think that that's how it's described necessarily. Maybe some aspects of it, but
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where I'm always like, I need to eventually go back and reread it just to see if maybe it was like because I was younger, or like that's just the way I pictured it, or if it's truly like, oh, okay, no, I was right.
my second favorite, very almost a close tie with The Giver, is The Uglies.
Are you excited for the show that's coming out?
Yes, but I don't want to get my hopes up. Because I love the book so much. Like, I'm obsessed. I've reread that series several times. Like, that was another one where I was like, dang, I want to write a book series like this. What?
Yeah. Oh, like, Uglies is such a good series. Have you read the new trilogy, like the sequel trilogy that he wrote?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It's pretty good. It's different set of characters because it's like, I think it's like 10 or 20 years in the future, but it's really good.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, kind of different vibes, but I liked it. So it was fun to revisit that world.
Yes, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much for having me. For anyone who wants to check out my books, you can find The Diseased Ones and The Unseen Ones on Amazon. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook as @DJHarringtonWriter.
And TikTok.
And did I not say TikTok?
I think you said Instagram and Facebook, but maybe you said TikTok.
Well, Instagram and TikTok. I don't really go on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't either.
I will say that while I have had this book on my TBR for well over 2 years, I still haven't read it. So this month I will be reading this book no matter what, because after interviewing Danielle especially, this book sounds so incredible. How could I have not read it sooner? That being said, let's jump into another interview, this time with Jay-Z Foster, author of the Reality Bleed series.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning, Jay-Z Foster. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. So this morning, I wanted to talk a little bit about your series, Reality Bleed, which the first book is called Hell on Mars. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the series?
Sure. It is a alternate universe where the world is on the edge of war. So it's like World War III, and there's an alien invasion. That's pretty much the premise. So we try to do a lot of world building and sci-fi horror stuff in there, and a lot of character development. So that's the aim anyway.
Yeah. So what made you decide to go more on the, like, it is science fiction, but it is also horror because it is very brutal. What made you decide you wanted to kind of go the brutality side and go more on the horror aspect of science fiction?
I actually started as a horror author. So I've written, geez, I don't know, 6 or 7 horror novels. So I kind of always tend to go that way. Like, I even wrote a kid's novel and it's got a little horror in it too.
That's awesome.
Probably got to tone that down. So.
Well, then I guess I should ask the question in reverse. What made you decide to write this as science fiction, or what gave you the inspiration to write a science fiction novel if you typically write in horror?
Well, I love the movie Aliens and the movie Alien, like Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
Like I love her. My wife and I watch the movie Aliens on Mother's Day every year. So because of her line, like, get away from her, you bitch. That changed my life. I even dedicated book 7 to Sigourney Weaver. So I really like that kind of vibe. So I do like sci-fi too. Like, I like Star Wars and everything. So it was a nice blend. Not that this is very Star Wars like. So it's,
yeah.
Yeah. Not really too much, but I hope to do that someday, a Star Wars like novel. So
I think it's fun. I think it's fascinating how many different subgenres there are in science fiction and how many different routes you can go.
Yeah.
So, and it's nice because I don't typically, generally speaking, I don't typically read a lot of horror novels. It's something like horror and thriller. I know it's two different genres, but those two genres I don't really read a lot of. I've been trying to kind of branch out into a little bit. So that's why I really like this with Hell on Mars, because it's a nice blend of science fiction, my favorite genre, and horror, a genre I'm trying to get into.
Stepping you into a little bit.
Yeah. So did you have a favorite character to write about? Because I know there's a lot of different characters. Do you have a favorite?
Well, it changes throughout the series. I guess in the earlier novels, I really liked writing Telson, or Teelson, however you want to say his name. I liked writing Braun, too. Braun is a very interesting person to write. And I like writing the aliens, so their perspective. So I think you're a book and a half in it, so you haven't, maybe you haven't gotten the alien perspectives yet. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I've gotten a little bit of hints, a little bit of like a few lines here and there of the perspective, but not fully. And that is actually something I wanted to ask too. What gave you the inspiration for the alien species?
Oh, geez. I guess Lovecraft would probably be the most, you know, H.P. Lovecraft and, oh man, I'm trying to think here. I guess it's a mix of Lovecraft, the Xenomorphs from Aliens, a lot. You know, actually, I went that route because whenever I try to imagine like an alien invasion or something like that, I can't really imagine us being able to fight like an intelligent race that comes here. So this is like the kind of nerd discussions I have. Like if they can get here, they could probably easily defeat us, I think. So it has to be monstrous, I think.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think it's very true. And it's very interesting how a lot of novels and movies that we see in today's, like in common media, doesn't portray aliens like that.
Yeah.
So it's very much, we have a chance. And it's like, do we? Would we?
I always think about this way, like the way we have drones now, I'm like, why would they even come to Earth? They would just stay outside our orbit or whatever and shoot drones at us until or release a virus onto Earth that eats our skin or something. Then we're all dead. There's nothing we can do about it. So
there's a lot. And I think it's interesting too. One of the things that I've always found interesting with aliens in novels and movies and media and different things, entertainment, is that they're always portrayed as they're going to invade. And I find it interesting because the other aspect of me is, what if an alien species comes and they want to just coexist, or they want to introduce themselves, or they want to have a communication? And so it's interesting how you can have completely different ends of the spectrums in books.
Yeah.
Which is one of the awesome things with books, is you can explore all these different alternatives.
I think that's the only other way it could really work, if they want to come down and just co-mingle or something like that. Yeah. If they're just invading us, we're done. We're done right away.
But then if they commingle, what's to say humanity's not like, oh, you're going to invade us. Poo-poo.
that would probably happen too. I'm sure that would happen.
Yep. And then one of the most difficult questions I ask people, what are your favorite novels to read?
Ooh, I really like history novels.
Okay.
Like these days I've read... And I can't remember the titles. I can't remember any titles. So I read like a book on the Comanche, the Korean War, stuff like that. World War II, obviously. World War I. But the last like fiction novels I really got into were, I believe it's called The First Law. Have you read those?
I haven't. I do own it. That one's by Joe Abercrombie, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So those are amazing.
I just got that series. So I have the three books, but I have not had the chance to dive in yet.
I think his character development is amazing. So that's what's really important to me, like novels that have really good characters. Like if I feel like the characters are just dumb and I can't really understand why they would do that, then I fall out of it like immediately.
Makes sense. Well, thank you so much for joining and being on as a guest for this episode. It was a pleasure to have you and be able to talk to you more about Reality Bleeds. And you can, if you're listening, you can always find this novel wherever books are found.
Oh, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
If you have not added the Reality Bleed series to your TBR, do so now, like immediately, because it is so incredibly good. I am having such a fun time reading this series. I'm currently halfway through. I have finished season 1 and I'm halfway through season 2. It is phenomenal. It's fast paced. I will say that it's a little gory. There's some horror aspects, so keep that in mind, but it is so good. I am consuming this series so incredibly fast. And if you want to hear more of what J.Z. Foster has to say, I do have a full interview with him coming soon. And now we'll move on to our next interview with Sam Renner. So let's go ahead and listen in. Thank you so much, Sam, for joining me on this episode.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit more about your series, Galaxy Run. Can you tell us what the series is all about?
Galaxy Run is a sort of classic space adventure. You know, it's focusing on a guy named Trevor Nixon. Trevor Nixon is sort of a never had any luck kind of person. He started out life as an orphan, kind of grew up on the streets, doing what he could to make ends meet, just sort of how do I get to tomorrow kind of thing. And that life is kind of carried over into adulthood. He's sort of the below average person, and to sort of to continue to make ends meet, to kind of whatever he needs to do to kind of keep himself fed and keep himself alive, he crosses the wrong people. And to get out of that, he turns to an old friend from his previous life, who's kind of made a better life for himself, and says, "Hey, look, can you help me?" The guy says, "Actually, I can. I've got a courier job I need doing, and I need somebody I can trust." And so Sam says, "Well, you can trust me." Trevor says, "You can trust me." And he says, "Fantastic." And as they're working out the details of what this job is, they're ambushed. And in the confusion, Trevor picks up the package that he's supposed to be couriering to someplace and takes off, sort of determined to make sure that package gets where it's supposed to go, because as his friend has told him, it's not just about money, there's lives on the line if this doesn't get where it needs to go. And so that's the first book. And then the next five books in the first part of the series are sort of his adventures on how does he get it that package from, you know, where he's at now to where it needs to be.
Okay, nice. So what gave you the inspiration for the story?
I am a child of the 70s, and so I don't have a point in my life where Star Wars is not a part of my cultural consciousness. So like, I would be lying if I didn't say Star Wars was part of it. More specifically, honestly, The Mandalorian, watched that with my wife, loved the first, you know, that first series, and thought I really could do something with a setting like this. Love the setting, and then sort of that's where it started from. But there's some Star Wars in there, most specifically The Mandalorian, but there's some things like Firefly and you know, other sort of classic sci-fi things are in there, but like I said, it's a space adventure story, so it's blasters and faster than light flight and multiple planets and alien creatures, and so it's sort of that really classic space adventure story. So lots of different influences, but I'd be lying if I didn't say Star Wars was a major one.
Nice. And then what made you decide, because I know it is a novella series, so there's, I think you said there's currently six out right now, and then the seventh one is coming.
Well, actually, there's eight out. There's six in the first series. I've written eight. I've released eight. I'm working on number nine.
Okay.
With plans for a lot more. But
gotcha. So what made you decide to write them as a novella series versus full novels, or kind of condensing multiple into one?
I like episodic style storytelling. I'm a big fan. Like my screen name in lots of places is Sci-Fi Serials. That's what I go with. And so I really like the idea of serialized fiction. I like that style of storytelling. It really fits the way I write. Nothing against full novellas. I love full novels. But I like the expediency of a novella. There's not a lot of extraneous plot. There's not a lot of other things. Like, it's just that main story. And that really fits my storytelling style. And then it fits in my head. These are TV episodes, or it's very episodic like that. So it's, you know, it's a very condensed story. All takes place sort of in a 100 pages at the most. And it's what I like to read. If I have my preferences, I like something a little bit shorter, something I can kind of get in and get out on. And so that's sort of just mostly it's what I like. And so that's why I went with that.
Nice. I think for me, I mean, I grew up reading full novels, but recently, within the past few years, I've been exposed to novellas, and I absolutely love reading novellas, because I do like that episodic aspect of a novella, because mm-hmm. you kind of get in, things happen, stuff goes down, and then it ends and you're kind of left, you want more. Yeah. But it's also nice because there is a lot of world building that can happen, but it happens quickly and you kind of immediately get grabbed into the story, whereas a novel can kind of take its time a little bit and sometimes you get a little bit lost. Whereas the novella, it just picks you right up and goes.
Oh, completely agree. Yeah, I've put down books. I'm a do not finish guy, and I don't feel the need to complete something if I'm not enjoying it. And there's been multiple times where, if I like, it's just, you're taking too long. You're this is way too much setup for not enough story. And I'm too far. I don't give somebody enough time. I'm probably too impatient in that way. But yeah, that's the thing I like about novellas. And, you know, there's more people publishing them now, which is the nice thing. You know, for a long time, people weren't doing them, but now there's more publishing houses that are realizing we can do something shorter or even novella length and still put out a good product.
Yeah, definitely. And so with your series, is there a character that you just kind of love, that's like, that is your favorite character, or your favorite to write in their shoes, and kind of you see their mindset on things a little bit easier?
So I don't want to give too much away. There's a sidekick character that I really like a lot. I feel like it's a woman. I identify with her a lot in just her, you know, I'm not somebody who writes my main character as me. So Trevor Nixon is not necessarily me. But the sidekick character that emerges is much more me. And I think that's me.
Okay.
It's my reactions to the things that I'm putting Trevor through, or the decisions he's making. I'm getting to react to them through this character. And I think she's the most fun for me to write.
Nice. Was there a specific scene, whether it's later in the series or in the first book, was there a scene that was very challenging to write, or you had a little bit of a hard time, whether you had to do more research or it was just hard to kind of envision what was happening?
I'm going to say there's not a scene, a book, and it's the book that I'm currently writing, a book number 9 in the second series. The first series, very straightforward. The second series, a little different, and book 9 needs to be the place where the story pivots. This is going to get a little writerly, and I apologize, but the story needs to pivot, and we've spent 8 books with these characters. And so that pivot needs to not just be a plot machination that, you know, does that moves the story in the right way, but doesn't feel believable. We understand what Trevor Nixon is going to do. We understand, put him in a situation. You can probably at this point, if you've read all the books, predict what he's going to do or predict his reaction. So I had to make sure, and this is where my struggle has been. Book 9's about a month delayed right now, but it's making sure that rings true, the decisions he's making that shift the plot. We went from here to here, you know, make sure that feels authentic. Like, and I didn't want it to someone to look at it and go, oh, well, I'm kind of out on this now, because like, he wouldn't do that. I know that character at this point and he wouldn't do that. So making sure that feels authentic has been the biggest challenge.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I feel like that definitely be hard to kind of stick true, especially if you're trying to make a harsh pivot and kind of a hard left or right turn into a certain direction that it wasn't on track for necessarily.
Yeah. He's kind of he has a plan and a vision for what he wants to be doing. And he's realizing that he needs to make a pivot and shift, and making that shift feel realistic and authentic is, yeah, it's tough. I think I'm there. I think it's going to require a few more scenes and a couple of other things to set some things up, because I had all the books in that next bit of the series planned. This changes that, because makes that decision feel authentic, I've had to switch some things. And so I'm having to make some edits that will make the other books make sense, but it's worth it. It's just taking a little longer than I wanted it to.
Gotcha. Well, I have one more question for you. What are some of your absolute all-time favorite novels? Like, what are your top 3 favorite books?
I'm going to give you one book. It's the first book. It's a book called Cowboy Angst. It's by a guy named Jason Emmons. He's written the one book. He's Harper Lee of the early 90s, without the raging success of Harper Lee, because I picked his book up off of a clearance shelf at Barnes & Noble probably 20 something years ago now. But the reason it's the book that has stuck with me the most. I'm not a rereader. I don't typically go back and read books a second time, but this one stuck with me. And I think it's because I read it at the point in life where I read it. Like it hit me at just the right moment. The book is about a kid who drops out of college and he goes back to his hometown and is playing drums in this country western band. And it's really just sort of a finding himself kind of story. Like, what am I going to do? I'm on my own. I'm an adult now. I don't have mom and dad to fall back on. My decisions are my decisions. The ramifications are mine to deal with. And I read that at a point where I was in the exact same spot in my life. I had just graduated college. I was working in journalism at the time, not loving it and wanting to pursue writing as a career, fiction writing. I was doing some journalism writing, but just, I guess I was at that moment with when I was reading that book, it was like this, I saw myself on the page. And so that's the book that, like, for the last 20 plus years has stuck with me. He hasn't written another one. I wish he would, but Cowboy Angst is my all-time favorite book, or almost the book that just hangs with me the most. I also love sort of the 50s noir stuff, like the Raymond Chandler, if you're gonna make me pick one, Raymond Chandler's The Big Sleep is my favorite at the time, but I've just read The Hustler by Walter Tevis, all of that stuff that's sort of seedy underworld kind of stuff, you know, the private detective with the bottle of something in his drawer and the, you know, the light cuts across his face as it comes through the blinds, that kind of stuff. I love the conciseness of language in those stories. Like, there's not a wasted word. It's really straightforward. It's very much how I like to write. And in just reading reviews, there's been comparisons like to that style with what I do. Just love any of that stuff. But Raymond Chandler's The Big Sleep will be number two if you make me pick. And then the third one is going to be a series. There's a guy named Mike Brooks. He's out of England. He wrote it's called the Keiko series. It's a trilogy of books, Dark Run, Dark Something, and Dark Sky and Dark Deeds. It's three books. It's about sort of this ragtag crew on a ship, and they pull heists all across the galaxy. And it's the thing that I read when I read that. I'd been previously writing sort of near future sci-fi kind of cyberpunk stuff, dabbling in space opera, space adventure kind of stuff, but never really having the confidence to go for it. But I read those and went, this is what you want to write. Like, so that those books are they're great books. They're a lot of fun to read. But for me, it's also the thing that I'm like, just write the stuff you want to write. This is the stuff that really gets you going. So dive in there, write these things. And so those are my three. If you want to know the three books or series that sort of have influenced me.
Nice. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for joining on this episode. It was wonderful to chat with you.
No, I really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Just a heads up, Galaxy Run is currently only available as an ebook. That being said, if you have Kindle Unlimited, you're in luck because it is available there. I know for me personally, I do struggle reading ebooks, but I'm giving it my all because this series sounds incredible. And now we'll tune into our fourth and final interview with Erica Evren.
Thank you so much, Erica, for joining me on this episode and coming on to talk about your new book that comes out in just under a month, I believe, yes. Called Mission to Rorak. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what it's all about?
So Mission of the Rorak, it originally started as a prequel book, but what it's about is the superior race in this alliance. And as the superior race, they have basically, they have the monopoly, I guess, on everything. They're kind of like the guardians of the galaxy, I guess, if you will. But they discover that another race with superior technology to their own is attacking them. And this soldier named Catrix, he is called upon to lead the battle, I guess, against this new enemy. But as the story goes on, he doesn't realize that the actual leaders of this council have chosen him for ulterior motives. So there's secrets and schemes and ulterior reasons of why this low soldier was chosen for this job. And as the plot gets unraveled, then you kind of realize, like, oh my God, uh-oh. So it's like, it gets really, really, I found writing it was like, oh. So yeah, I hope readers enjoy it because I know I had a blast writing it. It was supposed to be a short book, but as I went on, it was like, it just had to keep growing. So I probably could have put more in there, but yeah, that's basically it. You know, a superior race meets their match when they're attacked by a ruthless enemy, and then Catrix is given a chance to lead the attack, but then there's other reasons why he was chosen. So yeah, it's kind of like my 10-second pitch.
So is it a standalone then?
No, it is part of a series. I leave probably a really nice cliffhanger at the end. I've been told twice now that it was like, oh, I want to see what happens next. So at least that part I did right. But yes, I already have the sequel. I'm on draft two of the sequel, I believe. Okay. So I'm just fleshing it out with more of the information that I learned of Catrix from writing the first book. So yeah, it's coming soon. Title to be revealed soon. Well, I guess it's in the back of them. You have to buy the book to see what the title is.
So is it going to be a two-book series, three-book series, just kind of see how it goes?
Well, I'm kind of like Stephen King where I pull that little thread through the loop to see what happens next. For myself, I know that there's a definite book three and I'm hoping a book four, but I also know if there's a story, then write it. But if the story starts to peter out, then learn where to cap it. But I do have lots of standalones, but like spin-off stories for the characters because there's tons of backstory for them. So I was thinking of tying their stories in somehow to this main series. I mean, if people wanted to say, oh, how did so-and-so's journey begin? Then they could find that book and read it if they wanted. Nice. I guess kind of like Star Wars, you know, how they tie everybody into the original saga.
Yeah, they have the main, what, 9 movies now or 11?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
a lot, and TV shows, but you have like all these other books that are kind of expanding further and further out on these characters and the things you don't see on the screen in the main series.
That's right. Yeah. You know, like, I guess Chewie's backstory, like we never know exactly like where he started, where he ended. We only see him in the main movies. So I don't know if they have something out for him, but it'd be cool if they did.
Yeah, that would be actually really cool. I don't think they do.
Right? What happened to Chewie?
I'm going to have to go research later and find out because I don't think I read anything as far as a backstory with Chewie.
No, I think the only thing I know of so far is that Han Solo saved him somehow and then he owed that to Han Solo and then... So he was his shipmate, but yeah, I don't know anything else. It's like, come on, what about Chewie?
Honestly.
Right? But
so how long did it take from when you first got the idea for the story to actually finishing the first draft?
So this is an interesting question because my initial story idea started when I was 13. And so what is actually considered my second book was my first book. And as I was writing it, I was like, well, this character, he needs more of a backstory. He needs a reason why people should care about him and why, you know, following the plot, why he relearns who he is and such. So as I was writing it or nearing the end of those first drafts, I was like, I need something. And then the story for the prequel started. And that really tied in like more of his culture, more of the setting, more of who he was as a race. His people, and then also the Alliance and why it was so important and why they were so revered. And it really showcases in the second book, kind of like how far things have fallen. And yeah, it gives people like a place to start and like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then it just rips it all away. So so this story actually took me 2 years to complete, but I wrote the first draft in 30 days.
Oh, wow.
So it was like right when like March 2020. So like I wasn't going to work. I was laid off for a little while. So I was like, I'm going to write the story that I've needed to write. So every day I challenged myself to like 1,000 words or whatever. And I would sit down and I would write those words. And then I found having action beats really helped keep me going. So I knew kind of where I wanted to go with the story. And then after that, it was like all the self edits, all the expanding on like, oh, I don't have details right now. I will just skip this part and keep going. So going back and filling those details in and fleshing it out a little bit. So yeah, I would say 2 years in total to complete this book. So yeah, it's been a fun journey.
That's awesome. So are you back in work now then?
Oh yeah. Like, I think I was only off work for 3 months because I worked in childcare. Okay. And once they figured out, you know, when we could come back together, what that looked like, 6 feet, yada, yada, constantly cleaning, then I could go back to work. And yeah, I've been working ever since. So I've been very blessed. And I actually got a new job since then as a preschool teacher. So blessed again. And I get my summers off. So busy writing more. Yes.
Outside of summer, during like the school year, are you still writing during that time?
Yes, there are days when I like, okay, as long as I sit down and do something, because working with kids can be quite tiring. And, you know, it's mentally exhausting because you have to be like almost like on a certain level to be with those children all that time. And so I say as long as I get like, you know, 500 words or 200 words or something, as long as I have a goal, then I can stay focused. As long as I'm like, oh, I don't know, like meh, if I don't have a goal or anything, I won't sit down and I won't write. So just to have that goal. But I do try every day to get some words down. Yeah. But then I also try not to beat myself up if I don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you meet a mental day where you just watch movies or like hang out with a cat or read, like, you know, can't be better writers if we don't read. So I'm working on reading more.
So what kind of books do you like to read?
Oh, sci-fi. And actually when I was little, I would read anything we had. But Red Rising was the series that got me back into reading as an adult. So I had heard so much about it. I'd seen it on my Instagram, like people were reading it, yada, yada. I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And at first it threw me for a loop because I'm not used to that kind of violence or like language. But it's like, you know what, this is enjoyable. Like, it is what it is. It's another world. And it wasn't too much for me that I couldn't handle. Like, some books are way up there that's like too much. And it was just the right amount. And I like how Pierce Brown, you know, he's got that kind of like godlike feel, like the Greeks and all that Roman underlying feel of it. So that was really intriguing for myself. Yeah.
Nice. So is that one of your all-time favorite books then?
My actual all-time favorite book it's going to sound silly, but it's actually Black Beauty by Anna. How do you pronounce her last name? Sewell? Anna Sewell? Yeah, Black Beauty. I don't know. It was a really beautiful story reading it growing up. And I think just how she made the connections between like friendships and life and, you know, just the example of how hard it hits you when you read it. So I think that was a good example overall of how to do it right. And, you know, that was wrote in like the 1800s. So it's pretty good. But for nowadays, a new favorite would have to be, I would have to say The Red Rising. Yeah, for sure. I haven't branched out too much. I just started rereading like, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years I've gotten back into reading. So I'm still trying to catch up. I'm lucky if I finish a book in 5 months, 6 months, so I'm pretty slow, but I see people reading like 5 books a month. I'm like, oh my God, they do that.
Yeah, so. it's
like, I don't know, how many books do you read in a month?
So it depends. It very much depends. How many have I read this month? I think this month I read around 3 books.
Okay.
I think.
But you've been busy. You've been flying places and doing things like,
yeah,
working.
Oh my goodness. Work has been crazy.
Yeah. What do you do for work, if I can ask?
Yeah, I'm a massage therapist.
That's awesome. Cam, coming to see you. That's great. Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. I work at a chiropractor office.
Oh, sweet.
And so it's like I work there 4 to 5 days a week, and then I go to people's homes the other days.
Wow.
And so I'm always doing something, and it does leave a lot of time for other things sometimes.
yeah for sure. Oh, that's so special though.
Why I love audiobooks.
That's right. You know, they're probably passed out sleeping and you can just listen and like work and plus you're helping them feel better. So
I have been wanting to do that for so long. I feel bad to do that, like to listen to an audiobook while I work on someone. But I know of a couple of massage therapists who do that. And I'm like, I'm very tempted. Like, I have some people that don't talk the whole session. I think it'd be okay.
Like have an earbud in and just gauge it. Like, are you comfortable to sleep or would you like to talk? Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I was like, should I be quiet? Should I talk? And it really depends on the therapist. So some I find really chatty. Some are just like do their job. And it's like, okay.
My thing is, like, I always tell the patient, I'm like, if you want to talk, we can talk. If you decide halfway through our conversation that you'd rather just have me shut up, just tell me to shut up. That's fine. Like, you don't have to be worried about your words. Just tell me, shut up, Josh.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's awesome. That's good you give them the option, because lots of people as you know, they're in a vulnerable spot. So they don't know, like, should I tell them? Yeah. So that's nice that you give them that option, right?
Yeah. I always try to, like, I think people can be very self-conscious.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So, like, do I talk? Do I not talk? And then the one, like, pet peeve that I have that I give all my patients a hard time with when they say it is, and it's specifically women, they will apologize for not shaving their legs. And I'm like, I work on men. Like, you are fine.
Yours is fine. It's soft.
Like, I do not care.
Yeah. I think, I would probably be the one to say that too. Like, before I went in, I'd be like, okay, am I good to go? Like, you know, like, I don't know what we're self-conscious about that. I think it's just the programming where we should be shameful about it's that, right? But
society, it's telling us over and over again that this is the way it should be.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. So,
yeah.
That's cool.
I think I was looking on my story graph, and my most amount of books that I've read so far is 14. That was January in a month.
They should have a world record.
Okay, see, I think it's crazy. Okay, so first of all, that was a lot of books. Like, that was a lot of books in January.
That's a lot.
February was quite a bit too. It was 11, I think. It was 9.
That's still pretty good.
But then May, I had nothing. And, like, I see other people on TikTok where they're like, let me show you the 27 books I've read. And I'm like, how are you reading a book a day?
What do you do with your life?
Honestly, I'm like, do you just have audiobooks on nonstop? And, like,
oh yeah, like, I never thought of that.
All right, so going back a little bit,
okay,
with your book, is there a specific character that was challenging to write, and why?
So the challenge would have been with Catrix, because A, he's a guy. So I was like, am I bringing this man character across properly? Because I'm a woman. And I felt kind of a little bit, would you say, like hesitant to write the character from a male perspective, because I felt like I was very inexperienced because I'm a woman. But I don't know. I've watched enough, like I watched Stargate Atlantis. I watched SG-1, Star Wars. So I kind of had a feel of how they should respond. But yeah, it was definitely Catrix because he was my main character for, like I said, my first book, which is actually now the second, but, just learning who he was, what kind of, challenges I could give him, what kind of, personal, like, what do you call them? Not setbacks, but flaws, you know, like what flaws can I give him that he's more relatable? And that was another challenge too, being in another galaxy, in another universe, on another planet. Just having him relatable to people in our world, like how can I bridge that? So that was probably the most difficult character to write. And I find the sarcastic ones are easy. The mean ones are easy, but the good ones are hard. Like the ones you care about. Why is this so hard? Like try not to make him perfect. Yeah. So I found his character be a little bit hard. So that's for sure. And yeah, everybody else came a little bit easier. Definitely the sarcastic and mean ones came way too easy. So I hope that doesn't reflect anything about me.
Well, I was going to say, are any of them inspired by people you know?
Not people, but like characteristics. You know, when you come across a person, you're like, oh, that's really not becoming, but that's kind of why you like that. So I kind of took all those things that I don't like just how people react, like how they fidget with their fingers or like play with their beards or like, you know, pop fruit in their mouth or like how they sip wine certain ways, or I don't know, just like little things that are pet peeves that are like would go well with an evil person, I suppose. Like I put all that in there. So I kind of stole from other people. Like I'm fortunate enough to not to know a lot of bad people in my life, but yeah, just I guess watching how people react, and also in myself, like, oh, I wasn't too kind there. I could put that in a book.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was, yeah, he was the most challenging for sure. And then everything else came easy. I don't know why. I also like writing like wiry characters. So I have a character in this book. He's like just that wild redhead kind of person. And he was one of my editor's favorite because he was so distinct. I like his language, his body language, like just who he was as a character. So like, he was fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well,
I know. I'm sure everyone listening is equally as excited. It comes out September 20th.
Yeah. So
a few weeks away, which is super exciting.
Yes. Very exciting. And if people want the paperback, it's already live, so they can go ahead and like order that if they want.
I know that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have told you.
I'm gonna have to go order
that. Surprise!
Well, thank you so much for being willing to join the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been awesome. This is my first experience doing this, and I really enjoyed myself. So thanks for all the awesome questions and for getting me to think. And yeah, it's been awesome. And I love following all of your TikToks and seeing you. And so keep it up. Keep going.
I appreciate it.
And that's a wrap. I hope you had as much fun listening as I did interviewing these incredible authors. If you wish to support this podcast, you can do so by buying the books through my bookshop.org link. That being said, some of these books, like J.Z. Foster's Reality Bleed series and Galaxy Run by Sam Renner, are not available on bookshop.org, so for those, you would have to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble to purchase them. Another way you can support this podcast is by joining my Patreon. That all being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I cannot wait for you to listen to the next one. The next one will be the third and final part in this rapid-fire series. If you like this style of episode, let me know so I can be sure to do it again in the future. Thanks again for listening and have a wonderful day.